good evening. I hope you all had a happy secular Hebrew New Year holiday. Please join me in saying the Ana Bekoach. Ana Bekoach, Gedula Jemincha, Tati Tzerura. Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi. These six letters have a gematria of 506. Which represents the same gematria as the phrase Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love. The two letters of the month of Tevet, the Ayin, which created the constellation Gedi, or Capricorn, as well as the month of Tevet, and the Bet, which created the planet Shabtai, Saturn. Together, the Ayin and the Bet have a gematria of 72, which represents the level of wisdom, of Chokhmah. We meditate on the Ayin and Bet during the month of Tevet to assist us in keeping control, being able to do more and greater restriction, especially this month, which is so difficult for most people. Kaber rinat amcha sagvenu taharenu nora. Kufrei Shayin sin tet nun. These six letters form two Hebrew words, kra, which means tear up, and satan, which means the negative force. Kra satan, tear up the negative force. The same six letters can be rearranged to spell two other Hebrew words, Sha'ar Katan, which means small gates, and it's a reminder to us to keep guards on our gates, our small gates, the eyes, the nose, the ears, and the mouth, the gates through which we allow the negative force within. Keep those guards up. Na gibor dorshe yehudcha kevavat shamrem. Nun gimel dalet yud kaf shin. Nun gimel dalet is a sequence that has a gematria of 57, which is the Hebrew word zan, which translates as parnasa, or sustenance. Sustenance is essentially anything that we lack, and we can use this sequence, Nun Gimel Dalet, in order to connect to the fulfillment that we are feeling a lack of. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that we can utilize to take back the energy that we've given to the negative side through our mistakes. Barchem tacharem rakame sidkatcha tami gamlem. Betet resh tzadi tav gimel. The middle two letters, resh and tzadi, has a gematria of 290, which is the same gematria as the prophetess Miriam. We can use these letters to connect to births, to connect to the strength of relationships, to use these letters to strengthen the relationship. Chasin kadosh b'rov tuvcha na'el adatach Tet Kuf Bet, Tet Nun Ayin. Yachid Geya Lamcha Pene Zochre Kedushata. Yud Gimel Lamed, Pei Zayin Kuf. This sequence of letters allows us to speed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah through this, the sixth millennium. Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziakatenu Yodea Talumot Shin Kufav Tzadi Yutav. The first two letters, Shin Kuf, has a gematria of 400. 400 is the number of levels of negativity, as well as the number of levels of positivity within the spiritual worlds. Shin Kuf, 400, represents the four worlds in their perfection of the 10 Sephirot within 10 Sephirot. 4 times 10 times 10 is equal to 400. The last four letters, Vav, Tzadi Yud Tav, has a gematria of 506, the same as the first verse, the six letters of the first verse, the same as Ahavatinam, unconditional love. And this teaches us that the creative process starts with love and manifests in all of the worlds, step by step, using the same consciousness of love, Ahava. We can use the six letters of this last verse as a tool to help us manifest in our lives all that we dream, all that we wish, all that we desire, all the goodness in our lives. And the last verse we say in a whisper, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malkuto Le'olam Vayed. I'm now going to read from the Zohar. I'm reading from the verse or section, the Zohar section of Shemot, which is the portion of the week. It's also the first portion in the book of Shemot, which is the second book of the five books of Moses. I'm reading in section 25, Come from the four winds, O breath. Verse 221. Vayhi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunenei Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunenehu V'taman Chamena Chad Barnash V'sharvita Chad Bidei V'hava Ka'im B'chad V'ticha Kevan Dechama Li Tava K'dekam L'gaba Amar Li Ma At Haka Umean at Anadik Yulna Sadya Abnena Le Mari Min Hagraya Anakach Zekach Chamena Bechmadbera Vialana Bechai Mearta Vinachitna Haka. And there I saw a man with a scepter in his hand standing in an entrance. When he saw me, he was surprised and stood by me. He said to me, What are you doing here, and who are you? I became very frightened. I said to him, Sir, I am one of the friends, and as I saw such and such in the desert, I entered this cave and came down here. This verse is part of the story of two of Rabbi Shimon's students, Rabbi Eliezer, his son, and Rabbi, who is the other rabbi? And Rabbi Abba were walking. And they were traveling from Tiberias to Tzipori. and they were joined by another man, and then they were starting to speak words of Torah. And this verse seems to be out of context and not really clear, but it needs to be understood in the context of the story itself. But it also stands on its own. He's describing the man standing with a scepter in his hand is Adam, who's standing. The scepter is really the tree of life, and the entrance is the entrance to Gan Eden. And he's saying, why are you here? Because you're still alive and not dead. What are you doing here? And the man is describing why he's there, which was to escape something he became frightened of. And it's just to understand that the Zohar is never talking about physical things. It's always talking about spiritual worlds and laws. And we need to perceive that and understand it in that frame of reference. And we make a very big mistake that if we perceive what we're reading from the Zohar in the frame of physicality. Tonight's subject is, why should someone study Kabbalah? Why study Kabbalah? But before I get into that subject, does anybody have any questions? Okay. So, a one-sentence answer, why should somebody study Kabbalah, is why should someone breathe? What do I mean? Why should someone breathe? If we don't breathe, we die. And in our generation, if we don't study Kabbalah, we will die. Yes, we will be resurrected. Yes, we will come back in another place, another time, another life, where we will study Kabbalah. Because we are in this frame of 6,000 years, 7,000 years. And I refer you to the second class of the basic class, where we discuss this 7,000 year period. And we are in this period whereby the majority of humanity has corrected itself, but we have not. And we need a tool to break us out of the veils that we put on ourselves through all of the lifetimes that we've lived. So go ahead and breathe, because each human being was created as a desire to receive. And that desire to receive is considered metaphorically as a point within our heart. And that point within our heart causes us to seek to be closer to God. Most of us in our generation have so veiled this point that we no longer feel it, we no longer sense it. But from time to time, person to person, lifetime to lifetime, someone, through some merit or some gift, a merit is something they've earned, a gift is something that's given to them, which they will earn. Through some merit, a person activates this point in his or her heart, and he starts to search and seek spirituality. Now, not everybody is Jewish. Not everybody is a child of Israel, children of Israel. But everybody has the same desire to be closer to God. Now that's a metaphor. What does it really mean? What does it mean to be closer to God? For each human being, the meaning of that phrase will be different. To be close to God means to be thinking or to be like God. And what is the nature of God? The nature of God is to share. The nature of God is not to be thinking about God, but to be thinking about the needs of other people. To be closer to God means to be thinking more about other people. But that's a generic statement. It's a simple statement, and it's very profound. What does it mean to think about other people when your culture is preaching death? What does it mean to be thinking about other people when your culture is preaching, take care of yourself and not the other person? All of this relates to each individual's correction. The activation of that point in our heart to seek to be closer to God can only be done with the tools that we are given. And those tools are limited. Those tools are our desire. How do we strengthen our desire? Through knowledge, through learning. There are 70 general paths to God. One for each nation. The purpose of this path called Kabbalah is to balance all of these other paths. What do I mean by balance? Kabbalah includes all of the wisdom from every other nation. There have been items of wisdom that have been lost over the centuries and have been taken over by other nations. And yet, those elements of wisdom need to be brought back into the Kabbalah. Now, I'm speaking as if the Kabbalah is a central, unified whole. And it is, because Kabbalah means to receive. But what is it we are receiving? What is the purpose of Kabbalah? Kabbalah is said to be the innermost element of the Bible, of the Torah. Kabbalah is supposed to be the secrets of the Torah. What's been concealed and not revealed for centuries, except to a few chosen people whose heart, the point in their heart, became activated. Ultimately, every human being needs to breathe. Every human being needs to study Kabbalah in order to reach their perfection, in order to become closer to God. This was not always the case. But in our generation, as we have veiled ourselves so diligently need this Kabbalah. So what is the Kabbalah? The majority of the messages about Kabbalah come in the Zohar. But there are totally other aspects. There's understanding the Torah itself, the written scroll, and that we are supposed to reveal and look at that scroll letter by letter and understand the source of that letter within the Sefirot and understand how that letter relates to the letters around it, like within a word, or by rearranging the letters of that word to perceive it in a different way, or by counting the number of letters in a verse or in a word, or the gematria of a letter. All of this is part of Kabbalah, and yet it's not complete. All of this has different levels of consciousness. A person comes to the study of Kabbalah, and slowly the Kabbalah that they study causes their veils on that innermost point, that point in their heart. The Kabbalah, the energy of the letters, cause their veils to be broken, to be cleaned up, to be scattered away, to be taken away, revealing a more greater, larger desire to receive, to be closer to God. But each person has a different desire to be closer to God. What they came into this world to do is revealed within the wisdom of Kabbalah. So on one level, people need to study Kabbalah in order to learn what they came here to do, to be given the answer, what should I do? What decision should I make? Should I marry this woman or should I marry that woman? Should I go to this school or should I go to that school? Should I eat 3 hot dogs tonight or just 2? What is your decision? What should you do? And Kabbalah gives you tools to know, not to think, not to believe, nothing with an element of doubt. Ultimately, Kabbalah gives you the tools to know what it is you're supposed to do. With that in mind, let's move on and truly begin to understand what Kabbalah is and why someone should study it. Kabbalah means to receive. What are you receiving? Wisdom. The knowledge to change. The knowledge on how to change. The knowledge of who you are and what you are relative to every other human being, and what the human race is relative to every other race of angels or demons, as there are races of angels and demons. What is our place as human beings in the universe, in God's creation? What purpose do we serve in being creative? Is there a free lunch? In Kabbalah, you can get a free lunch. It's called free energy. You can create something from nothing. Of course, there is a consequence of doing that. In fact, the Kabbalists teach us that there was only one time in history that something was created from nothing. And that's what's your creation. The desire to receive came from a source called the Creator, that he did not have within it a desire to receive. And therefore, the creation was from nothing. Everything else that has been created in the world, in the universes, in the spherot, in the levels of consciousness, everything else is a change within that same desire to receive. As it changes, as we form different aspects, creation is something from nothing. Formation is changing that something into something else. This is the wisdom of Kabbalah. So what? How does that help me in my life today? Why should I study Kabbalah? When you are given a gift, you have to give it back. A law of balance in the universe. What you receive must be shared, or it will be taken away from you. Well, what is the most precious thing that you ever received? Don't tell me the diamond rings, and don't tell me the big football stadiums and the big television set. What is the most precious thing that you've ever received? Life. Correct. Life is the most precious thing you've ever received. Life is a gift. A gift must be shared or given back, a spiritual law. Why must it be shared? Why can't I keep it? Go ahead and try. What's the end of all life? The end of all life is called death. But we've told you in our teachings of Kabbalah, death is a new beginning. What happens to the gift of life? The body dies, the body is no more, the soul goes on, the soul reincarnates, the soul completes its mission and waits for the rest of us in Gan Eden. The soul doesn't wait in Gan Eden, it comes back and reincarnates because it hasn't completed its mission, its purpose, its reasons for being. Kabbalah will teach you why you are, who you are, what you are. There are other wisdoms that teach these same things, but not in a complete, total, balanced way. That's Kabbalah. Why should someone study Kabbalah? Why can't I just live in this life until it ends? And Hashem would say to you to answer that question, no problem, go ahead. That's what you want to do, that's fine. You have free choice. I'm asking you to reveal me. I'm asking you to serve your purpose. I'm asking you to give back this gift of life in a way that pleases me, a way that expands way that makes me different. Actually, in a way that makes you different. Study Kabbalah so you can see that. Is Kabbalah to be studied by every person? Well, three times tonight I've said it should be studied by every person. Yet there are many people who choose not to study Kabbalah. And the answer for that is not yet in this lifetime. Their center point hasn't woken up. Will it wake up? Yes. When will it wake up? When you do your work, changing yourself, causing them to change, that will wake up their center point, their desire to be closer to God. Will it change that desire? No. But it will cause them to sense a lack. It will cause them to be more sensitive to what is around them spiritually as well as physically. Look around you. I'm looking around. I see some couches, some students, a lovely room, well decorated, well lighted, happiness, joy. What am I not seeing? I'm not seeing the sickness in the world. What am I not seeing? I'm not seeing people hurting other people. What am I not seeing? I'm not seeing the molecules and the atoms of everything, this illusion that I'm looking at. Kabbalah is a tool to expand your consciousness. What does it mean to get closer to God? It means to expand your consciousness. God's consciousness is inclusive of every atom ever seen in the universes. His consciousness includes that. Does yours? Obviously not. Can you expand your consciousness to include that? That's the purpose of our existence. Learning to expand our consciousness. Part of doing our work is expanding our consciousness. Part of doing our work is learning to meditate on the Hebrew letters and utilizing those Hebrew letters to expand our consciousness. It sounds like a paradox. It sounds like a circle that never ends. And that is also true. Kabbalah changes you. Its purpose is to change you because you came here to change. You came here to be a different person than you were. You came here to grow spiritually so that you could grow spiritually. So that you could grow physically. What does growth physically mean? If I say to you that you growing physically means to be happier, most of you would say to me, but that's a spiritual concept, not a physical concept. What makes you happy? What is happiness? Isn't it just chemicals interacting in our bodies? Isn't it just the endorphins fitting into the certain cells in our brain? Isn't it just a chemical Who is in control of consciousness? You, your brain, your mind, Hashem. Pick one. Pick all. Kabbalah assists you in understanding that paradox. A friend of mine, as part of his own spiritual growth and his own study of Kabbalah, has recorded certain benefits for learning Kabbalah. My friend is coming from the frame of physicality. He is learning Kabbalah from that frame and doesn't include the spiritual in this list. But we will talk about that as we talk about the list. One of the benefits of learning Kabbalah, as specified in the Zohar, knowing the master plan. Without Kabbalah, you can never know the master plan. You can ask the question, why am I here? Why does good things happen to bad people? And the verse, the reverse, bad things happen to good people. You can ask the questions. Without Kabbalah, you cannot get the answers. You have no vessel to be able to understand that. Many people in the religious world ask these questions and answer, it's God's will. God knows, I can't. God knows what he's doing, I trust him. Everything we do starts in our consciousness, in our minds. Everything we do is related to our minds. If we cannot imagine something, we cannot achieve it. Why do good things happen to bad people? Kabbalah allows you to imagine an answer. Maybe it's a wrong answer. But if you can't even imagine a wrong answer, you can never reach the right answer. The truth. An attribute of God called truth. Do you want to know the master plan, or you just want to go through the process as one of the soldiers? What's your answer? My friend says that the damage of not learning the master plan is chaos. If you choose not to learn the master plan, the result, the cause, the effect is to bring poverty, to bring war, to bring disasters, to bring chaos on a global scale. But it's okay. You don't have to learn it all. You don't have to know the master plan. Just go about your jobs. Go to work, raise your family, and you are doing everything that you are supposed to do in this life. True or false? Is that life fulfilling for you? That is fulfilling for some people. And their answer to knowing the master plan is, no, I don't want to. They have free choice. But the Zohar is teaching us, every person needs to learn the master plan. plan in order to know their place within it. The Zohar teaches us that the benefits of learning Kabbalah is to know the oneness of God. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Listen, Israel. Hashem is our God. Hashem is one. I just made a statement. Is it true or is it false? If I don't truly know the oneness of God, that statement is a lie. How can I say God is one if I do not know He is one? I can believe He is one, but belief has an element of doubt. Therefore, the statement is a lie. And God's name, one of His attributes, is Emet, truth. There is no room for falseness in God. There is room for falseness in human beings. As part of the growing, our learning, our connection to Kabbalah, learning how to eliminate the sheker, the lie. The benefit of studying Kabbalah is to know the oneness of God and to stop saying the lie. The danger, the damage, the chaos of not learning the oneness of God the idea that you're just an animal munching the straw, the horse that eats grass to its heart content, or even the amazing discussion, revelation. The snake is cursed in the Garden of Eden to crawl on its belly and eat dust for the rest of its life. What kind of a curse is that? He doesn't have to earn a living. What kind of curse is that? He's going to be well fed for the rest of his life because there's no place where there's no dust. What kind of a curse is this? Give me this life, Chas V'Shalom. What does it mean that it's a curse to eat dust? The curse is that you never ask God for help. There's always something to eat. There's always a place to sleep. There's always life. You never ask for help. How many people want to live their life by not asking for help? I'm a strong man. I don't need anybody. I can take care of my family. Or is it beneficial? Is it a blessing to ask for help? It's a question that we don't discuss unless we study Kabbalah. The Zohar says in the portion of Naso, it says that studying Kabbalah hastens the redemption. And to not study Kabbalah lengthens the redemption. The Ari in the Gates of Gilgulim, the Gates of Reincarnation, teaches us that a rabbi who dissuades people from studying Kabbalah, as over the centuries many did, and even today many will say don't, a rabbi who is doing that reincarnates as a dog. Hasten the redemption or become an animal. Study Kabbalah. What is the issue of a speedy redemption? Every day that the redemption does not happen, every day that the temple is not built, is a day that I cause the destruction of the temple. It's a day that I tear it apart brick by brick. It's a day that I hurt you because I didn't build the temple today. I didn't build the temple in my heart, and ultimately I didn't build the physical temple. Only through the study of Kabbalah can I come to understand the truth of that statement. What is the benefits of learning Kabbalah? You merit being able to be alive and seeing the coming of the Mashiach. And what is the damage? God hides his face from us. I haven't seen God my whole life. What does that have to do? You know, what are you talking about? What do I care if I see the Mashiach or not? Of course, there is that scene in the movie The Ten Commandments where the old man prayed every day of his life to merit seeing the face of the Messiah, of the Redeemer. And he dies in the arms of Moshe. So God fulfilled his wish. But Kabbalah teaches us to be careful what we wish for. We all know the stories of women who've asked for children, but forgot to ask for healthy children. Be careful what you ask. But it is truly a blessing to be able to ask God and not have to eat the dust as the snake. Understand what the wisdom of Kabbalah provides for you. The benefits of learning Kabbalah, according to Yaakov Avakatzeria, which is one of our sages from Morocco. The Baba Sali, you may have heard of, is the one who lived up until the early 80s, I think, maybe 90s, but his father or his uncle wrote that the reason to study Kabbalah is you will learn the reason your soul comes into this world. And the damage in not studying Kabbalah is you walk around in blindness without this information. So what? I'm walking around the Colosseum in the dark, and I'm bumping into this piece of furniture and that human being and this tree that's planted in the middle of the football field. So what? Why should you study Kabbalah? Is to know who you are. Why shouldn't I just enjoy the pleasures of the physical world? Why shouldn't I just sit in the sun? Let's all move to a tropical island where the food grows on trees, and everybody is immensely happy all the time. Isn't that the truth? But of course there is another part of the world where there are people planning to blow up that tropical island. After all, the United States needed to create the atomic bomb and then test it to see how it worked. So that's what happened to Bikini Island, instead of somebody living on it. What is cause and what is effect? And that's the premise and the reason to study Kabbalah, to know what is cause and to know what is effect, to know why I get angry, to know why I get upset, to look at the person who's upsetting me and realize I'm just balancing what I did wrong last lifetime. So thank you for being my mirror. Can you achieve this level of consciousness without studying Kabbalah? No. The final answer I'm going to give to you as to why do you study Kabbalah was revealed by Rabbi Cook. Rabbi Cook was the first Ashkenazi rabbi of Jerusalem, of Israel. He was appointed in the 1920, 21, 22. He was a very famous Kabbalist that people find very difficult to understand. When the Zionist movement was developing and becoming strong and causing or helping to cause the state of Israel to manifest physically, the religious community, the Orthodox community, had great difficulty. The religious community didn't know what to do. Here you have all these young, strong, pioneering students, young people, coming to the land, clearing the land, building a country, rebuilding the country, making it a land of milk and honey, swearing all the way, cursing God all the way, doing anything that would trouble the religious community, having dinner on Yom Kippur instead of fasting, having parties on the most holy day of the year. This was the Zionist movement. How did they rationalize? How did they understand this is happening? There's even a sect of religious Jews today whose teacher teaches that the state of Israel should be overthrown. They just, in the last month, transported families of Jews from Yemen to the United States so that they wouldn't go to Israel. Understand this conflict. Understand this. And here comes Rabbi Cook, who taught that this was a necessary part of the process, that the body has to be built so the soul can get strong. And he was explaining, study Kabbalah so that you can understand the roads in the wilderness that your soul travels, that you can understand who you are, what you are, why you are. Understand, study Kabbalah so that you can penetrate the light of God to the depths of your soul. This is why we should study Kabbalah. Please do so. I'm also going to share with you a very quickly, if I can, a story that relates to my teachings for next week. The story is about the first casualty of the Operation Cast Lead, the first casualty in the war in Gaza, was named Devir Emunelef. He died leaving his mother, who was already a widow, without any descendants. She is moving on with her life. She was continuing her life. She's a religious observant woman. She knew that there was a process and that this was the right thing for her son. But she didn't understand it. She didn't study Kabbalah. But some friends had planned an outing for her for the anniversary of her son's death. And for whatever reason, and there is a reason, she didn't go on the anniversary, she went a week later. And as she is sitting in the bleachers waiting for this concert to begin that her friends had taken her to, she saw a little boy, handsome with blonde hair and blue eyes. She's a kindergarten teacher by profession, and she was drawn to the boy, and they begin to speak. She asked him if he'd like to sit next to her. The boy's father, seeing that the boy is bothering a woman, calls him over, brings him, come back. The father is calling to the boy and saying, Eshel, the boy's name, why don't you come back and sit next to me and Devir? Devir is not a common name. Stunned, she turned around and saw the father holding a little baby. What did you say the name is? Devir, responded the father. How old is he? 6 months. Forgive my asking, was he born before or after the war in Gaza? And the answer was after. And she gasped, forgive me for pressing and talking about what's your business, but why did you name him Devir? And the father explained that the baby was named after the first soldier that was killed in the war, her son, but he didn't know that at the time. His story touched us, and we decided to name our son after him. So Dalia, the mother, revealed who she was, that she was Devir's mother. The baby's mother had come up and heard the conversation and didn't believe her. She asked where her name is, where she lived, proved that she's the woman. And the mother said, we plan to invite you to the Brits. Brit Milah, the circumcision. But we never got to it. It's such a busy time after the baby was born. We wanted you to come because we wanted you to know this. So my question to you, this was the story, and they have now, these two women have become close. The mother of Devir, who died, spends time with the Devir who's in this world. So my question to you is, it coincidence? Is it circumstance? Does it just make sense that people named their baby after the first soldier who died? Or is this a reincarnation of that soldier who now is dealing with giving pleasure to two mothers? Look at the difference in concept. Look at the difference in truth. Can we know the truth? Come next week and listen to the discussion of reincarnation. Are there any questions? Rabbi Cook teaches that it is necessary that the state of Israel be built by people who are not religious.
That's what I don't understand. And could you define Zionist in the modern way?
No, because Zionist in the modern way is not used properly. Zionist in the modern world has become corrupted because of the way the Muslims refer to Zionism.
That's why I don't understand, because your definition of Zionism is not the same as the modern definition.
To answer your question is a long explanation that we really don't have time for. But briefly, if I can do it, try and do it quickly, and I apologize if I don't catch up to it. For those on the conference call, the question is to explain Zionism, which was not clearly understood. The history of Zionism started in the late 1890s, and it was a movement that developed to build a Jewish homeland. It was started by people who were not observant, by non-religious people. But there were religious people in the movement. There was support by some of the religious community, but there was conflict within the community. The state of Israel, which is part of the prophecies of Mashiach, the state of Israel can only come when the Mashiach reveals himself. And Mashiach hasn't revealed himself, so how can we have a state? This is all part of the discussion and the understanding and the conflict and the study of Kabbalah that helps explain all of this. Gaza, before this last war, there was a conflict called Gush Katif. There had been settlements put into the land of Gaza by the Israeli nation, the Israeli government, allowed settlements to be built. And now, 4 years ago or so, they sent the army in to move the settlers out because they were giving the Gaza Strip back to the Arabs. So you had a conflict. You had actually a war of words, but it could have developed into a war of bullets between Jew and Jew, between Israeli soldiers and the settlers who would live there for 20 years and had built their lives, their communities, their economics, all of this. And of course they warned that what would happen is happening, but that's beside the point. What we didn't understand and what people didn't understand at the time was this was a reenactment of the conflict between the two nations of Judah and Israel at the time of the first temple. After Solomon died, the nation split into 10 tribes in the north called Israel and 2 tribes in the south called Judah. The king in the north would not allow his people to travel to Jerusalem because of his ego. And so he built calves. Golden calves. He built 2 calves that his people were to take their sacrifices to. one of the Jewish kings. Read the Book of Kings. It's just amazing. So the point I'm making is, last lifetime, the people in Gaza were confronted with soldiers and were killed trying to go to Jerusalem to be close to God. And this time, they were trying to be close to God following their religious beliefs against a secular Israeli government and its soldiers, but there was no death. There was no killing. There was a partial correction in this action. This is the process that Kabbalah lets us see. To answer your question about Zionism, takes a good hour conversation about what is the history, the modern history of the development of the land of Israel. On November 29, 1947, the day I was born, a Shabbat, the United Nations voted to partition the land of Palestine. That didn't happen in a vacuum. That didn't just happen. There was a whole 100 years of effort. There was a whole 2,000 years of exile that brought it into being. But why was it done in a non-religious way, as opposed to a Torah way? This is all part of the plan, part of the balance that Kabbalah teaches us how to see what is cause and what is effect. Any other questions?
Do you think that that should have happened, the creation of the state of Israel?
The fact that it did happen, that means it should have happened. If it didn't need to happen, it wouldn't have happened, God forbid.
Well, there are things that happen that they don't need to happen, right?
No. Anything that happens in the physical world needs to happen. It could be that the effect is a longer process, as opposed to if it hadn't have happened, it would have been a shorter process. But for whatever quantum reason, it happened means it had to happen.
What about the actual war that they're having now with the Palestinians?
Again, our choice is to bring the Messiah with peace or with chaos. You're seeing a little of both. You're seeing the process. As our quantum consciousness manifests, I hope, I know it will come in peace.
But why can't the Palestinians?
You're asking a question that, again, takes a very long answer. No one is saying the Palestinians cannot live there.
Why not take the accepted state, I guess?
Again, no one is saying that that wouldn't be. If you go back to 1947, that's exactly what was supposed to be, the partition into two states.
So why didn't it happen?
Because the Arabs didn't let it happen then, and the Arabs will not let it happen now. They're resisting the two states more than the Israelis. But again, it's a discussion that we don't have time for. Choices, which way do you want to perceive the world? Coincidentally or with a purpose?
Can I add to that? I was actually, it's funny because that's really about the world. And
hold the thought, please, because we're out of time.
Okay.
Does anybody have any other questions before I wish you shalom? Please remember tomorrow night we will be discussing the certain letters within the Tree of Life.